Well, hello and welcome to What's Brewing, CSFA? What's Brewing, CSFA is a podcast produced for the California Community Colleges Student Financial Aid Administrators Association. I'm your host, Dennis Schrader. I serve as the 2020-2021 CSFA president. My co-host Dana is still in the middle of home improvements and unfortunately won't join us today. So let's go ahead and start the show. And welcome back to another episode of What's Brewing, CSFA? Let's kick this show off with our first cup. So get something nice and filled. A nice cup of coffee or whatever you're drinking this morning or afternoon, whenever you're listening to the show. And get right into it. So, of course, this is a Tuesday recorded episode. Normally, we would have Dana Yarbrough, my host, with us. But, again, she is in the middle of home improvements that will maybe never end. But I do hope to have her back on the show for our episode we'll record later this week. So today, being Tuesday, is a news day. Let's talk about news and what's going on in the financial aid and higher education world. So if you are from Southern California and didn't know it, our local LA Cash for College team has new workshops coming up for high school students this month. If you check out their website at lacashforcollege.splashthat.com, and we'll include that link in the show, you'll see they have a virtual college fair coming up Saturday, April 17th, a session on understanding financial aid offers on Tuesday, April 20th, and that one will be in Spanish, and a session on better money habits on Wednesday, April 21st. They're even offering some on-demand financial aid application workshops and college application workshops. Now, of course, we have passed some major deadlines, but we still have students out there that are trying to decide where to go. So even though you may have missed the March 2nd deadline for Cal Grant, we still want you to do your federal aid form if you haven't done so yet. Same thing with college applications. Many of the four-year universities have closed their cycles, but especially with community colleges and those in California, we are open enrollment and we'll take students along the way. For more information on, of course, what's going on in this world at the LA Cash for College website and all, we'll include that link to their website in our show notes. Moving on to a new article here from NASFA, posted just last week. While the rate of prospective college students who have completed their FAFSA has started to stabilize, nearly 30% of both first-generation and low-income students indicate completing the form was difficult. This comes from a recent survey by EAB. These students were 10 to 15% more likely than other students to say the FAFSA is difficult, with Latino and Asian students reporting the most difficulty with the form. So, what's causing all this difficulty? Well, cited in the survey of more than 15,000 students were lack of parent support, difficulty getting the right tax information, income changes and trying to figure out how to handle those, confusing questions, which there are certainly some of those, and issues regarding citizenship status. Here is, though, one interesting note from the survey probably accounts for some of the issues and difficulties faced by students. Nearly 40% of first-generation students and 37% of them said that they complete their FAFSA on their own, compared to only 11% of students from higher-income families. So this isn't to blame the students, but it certainly would seem that missing the family support through the FAFSA process may be part of the problem here. What can be done to help students? EAB advises, based upon these survey results, that higher education institutions, you know, clearly and proactively communicate with students regarding financial aid options, especially with families that may have had a loss of income due to the pandemic. Also, extending priority deadlines when possible, and offering in-person FAFSA workshops can help. We'll include a link to the NASFA article in our show notes. Next news item here. Have you ever been caught up wasting time looking for a financial aid regulation or guidance from the feds or analysis by the NASFA folks? There is no need to waste time anymore. You can go straight to the NASFA Student Aid Reference Desk. You'll find direct links to everything I mentioned above, or I should say 2 seconds ago, along with links to legislative text and more in case you really want to dive in on issues. All of it has been vetted by the NASFA staff, and you'll find information from policy organizations, institutions, researchers, and federal agencies at the site. The best part is the Student Aid Reference Desk is free, and it's pretty easy to use. I've checked it out. You'll find it at studentaidrefdesk.org, but in case that's a little hard to write down real quickly, we're going to put a link in our show notes for everyone to get to the Student Aid Reference Desk. Now, of course, this is a news day, so it wouldn't be a news day without telling you at least a little bit about some upcoming training for financial aid folks out there. FSA posted some new webinars to their Partner Connect website for the month of April. We have maybe missed out on the first one that was on April 12th, just yesterday, on SAP and R2T4, but there is a webinar coming up on April 26th on distance education and institutional eligibility, and a webinar on subscription-based programs coming up on May 10th. There's other ones in between. Don't worry about it. To find out more about how to register for the webinars, check out the link in our show notes to the FSA Partner Connect website. This is that redesigned website that took over the old IFAP website and some other federal sites consolidating data for us financial aid professionals. Now, not that we need to continue to offer free time on our show to NASFA, but they did have a good article regarding the return on investment for low-income students when it comes to the value of a college degree. A new report from Third Way, a public policy-focused think tank, using a price-to-earnings premium to make their analysis on the return on investment, or ROI, as you might hear in the investment world, for low-income students going to college. So this report talks about that. Based on the report, low-income students earned less when compared to high school graduates for about 20% of the colleges and universities reviewed, even 10 years after they started their college enrollment. From the report, quote, "It's unlikely that low-income students who attend these institutions will ever be able to recoup their educational investment," unquote. Here's a breakdown of some of the report's findings. At more than 60% of for-profit institutions, low-income students earn less than the average high school graduate within 10 years of entering their institution. This means little or no economic premium for their education. It's a bit better at bachelor degree-granting institutions, where 58% of such students recoup their college costs within 5 years or less, and 82% within 10 years or less. A little bit of good news, though, here. A majority of low-income students at associate degree-granting institutions are able to recoup their investment in 5 years or less. But a higher percentage of associate degree earners at community colleges showed no return on investment compared to students getting their associate degrees at four-year institutions. Some more bad news. Certificate-granting institutions that could include community colleges were found in the report to be the most likely to leave their average low-income students earning less than those who had never gone to college. At more than half of these institutions, and these might be some for-profits in here or non-profit career colleges, the average low-income student saw no ROI at all. There's a lot more in the report, so check out the link in our show notes to the NASFA article. The original report from the Hechinger Report website is linked within the article. Now, there was a real nice article on Money Magazine's website titled, Financial Aid Offers Are Negotiable. Here's how to ask colleges for more money and get it. Now, we may not think about financial aid and negotiations, or that word tends to scare or put off some financial aid folks. But again, this is Money Magazine aimed at a more general audience. So keep that in mind, everyone. So not that there's a lot of new news in the article for people that work in the field like us, but considering the audiences for the general public, and maybe more specifically parents sending their kids off to college, this article does a pretty good job of laying out the general financial aid process and providing tips on how to request more need-based and merit aid for the student. For example, if your family's earnings have tanked during the pandemic, this could give reason for the college financial aid office to review the FAFSA results and see if the change in income would make a difference in need-based aid eligibility. On the merit aid front, the article suggests using multiple aid offers from similar colleges to request your college of choice try to meet the amounts offered by the other schools. Considering many colleges use some combination of grade point average, SAT and or ACT scores, and other academic factors for making merit aid offers, colleges may be willing to review such requests if they really want you there as a student. To read the full article, check out the link we'll put in the show notes. It's a very, very long link, but it goes to the Money Magazine website, and it's good to see they're talking about financial aid for both us and our students. Before we roll on with more news, let's take a little musical break, and we'll have some more articles for you. And just like that, we are going to be back here for our second cup segment. Time to get a refill, everybody. Have a few more articles. It might be a shorter than normal show today, but that's okay. Once we have Dana back on Friday, we'll probably run really long, make up for it all. So starting off, I found a really nice short article in the Alice Echo News Journal out of Alice, Texas. So for their financial aid tip of the month for April, they suggest you know your college's Satisfactory Academic Progress Standards, or SAP as we call it in the biz. This is applicable not in Texas, obviously, but at any college, including all of our California community colleges. Not that our standards differ much from college to college, but students seem to be unaware often that there are academic requirements for them to receive and continue to receive financial aid. You, my audience out there, because I can't ask Dana, do you know our three main standards used in a satisfactory academic progress policy? If you don't, let me break it down for everybody. The first one is grade point average. Generally speaking, you need a 2.0 to graduate. So a 2.0 is normally the lowest allowable grade point average allowed to maintain financial aid eligibility. The second standard most colleges will be what's called pace of progression. This is, in a sense, the percentage of units or credits, depending upon how they define classes at your school, successfully completed over time. To keep on pace, most schools will set that no lower than 66 or 67%. And the reason for that is it's kind of tied to the last of the three major standard schools use, called maximum time frame. In a sense, the federal government allows schools and students to receive aid for up to 150% of the normal number of units or credits required to complete the student's academic program. So here at the community colleges, we used to think of this as the 90-unit rule, but in reality, it's 150%. And what that means is, if I'm doing an associate degree and it requires 60 units to complete and receive my associate degree, 150% of that would be 90 units, which means that while I'm at a community college, I can attempt up to 90 units and still be within that maximum time frame rule and be making progress. And in a sense, that's where that pace of progression rule plays in also, because if I'm passing 67% or two-thirds of my units along the way, even if I get 90 units attempted, I should have at least 60 of those completed, two-thirds, and be making progress. Now, along the way, every semester or every year, depending upon the way the school does it, they'll be looking at a student's GPA, pace of progression, and maximum time frame to make certain that they're meeting the academic requirements of financial aid. Probably a good thing about this article is reminding students, in short, about the idea that, yes, there are academic standards, because they may be different from the institution's academic standards regarding academic probation or dismissal. I'll definitely put a link to this article in our show notes. It isn't a very long article, but it's not a bad idea to read it and or pass it along or steal from it for your students at your college. So if you just completed your FAFSA and were selected for verification, what would you do other than run to the hills? According to an article at UNLV, so we're borrowing from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas website, there's four things they recommend. And I think these are applicable to anyone, anywhere. First and foremost, don't panic. Remember, 25% or more of students, usually it was up to 30% in the old days we'd be tied to, are selected for the verification process once they've done the FAFSA. So that's done by the federal government. Oftentimes, schools may select you for verification, but normally the federal government picks about 25% or more. So you're not alone. Second thing to keep in mind, act as quickly as possible. You know, after running to the hills, you want to get right on this. Read the directions you find online in your student portal or on the form, if you're receiving paper forms, that you get from the financial aid office. Time is of the essence. Generally, a financial aid office won't make an aid offer without you completing the process. Third, don't ignore the verification request, or should I say requirement. Generally, if the federal government has selected the student for the verification process, they have to complete it to be eligible for aid. Lastly, fourth, and lastly, don't be afraid to ask for help. Now, the article gives a link to contact in the UNLV financial aid office, but I would suggest if you are there in one of our California community colleges and going to use these four things, suggest back to your students to contact your financial aid office. Don't confuse the UNLV people over there in the financial aid office. I'll have a link to that article in our show notes. I think we're rolling right on to the last of our news items for today. There was a good article for all of us to steal from, as I know students at all of our California community colleges need some encouragement in completing the FAFSA and verification process. Too many students start the process, but they melt along the way. To close out our news day here on the What's Brewing CISFA show, let's go big time on financial aid on this and see how that we can help students. Did any of you, if you are out there, see that financial aid made it to the little big screen? What am I talking about? Good Morning America, the TV show that's on early in the morning for those of you that get up early and turn on the TV to check out what's going on across the nation. Well, Good Morning America had an article on their website, so I'm going to assume it made it to the show, about a former financial aid counselor helping students navigate the costs of college. Jessica Brown, CEO of the College Girl Foundation and former financial aid counselor at Howard University, is helping students better understand the financial aid landscape and how they can apply for and receive the maximum aid for going to college. She wrote a book titled, How to Pay for College When You're Broke. I just ordered the book this weekend and hopefully it'll arrive here in the next couple of days. I'll tell you my thoughts on it in a What's an I Dare You To segment in the next few weeks. Jessica's nonprofit, The College Girl, and that's G-U-R-L, Foundation, the College Girl Foundation, provides college prep for low-income, first-generation, and minority college students. Along with the foundation and the book mentioned just a second ago, she's also written another book titled College Girl's First College Tour. The book follows a diverse group of elementary school students who take a college tour and learn about different career possibilities for later in life. Sounds interesting. There's more in the article, but Jessica's best advice is this that I found. Prepare for college and college costs early. I think that's really key. If you wait until your student is accepted to college, you're way too late. May not mean that, of course, you're going to save 100% of the money up beforehand for going to college, but there are steps along the way for planning. Savings is one. Taking college tours is another step. Working on academics is important throughout a student's K-12 time, but it gets more important in those sophomore, junior, and senior years. And tracking all of the students' accomplishments, both in school and out of school, will save headaches when senior year rolls around and it's time to actually fill out college applications and your FAFSA. And here in California, let's not forget our Dreamers, our AB 540 students, and them filling out their California Dream Act application. So definitely check out this article at the Good Morning America website. I'll include a direct link to it, as it is a pretty inspirational story in our show notes. Let's take another quick little musical break. We'll come back for our last sip. And we're back, of course, for the last segment of the show, our last sip. So without Dana, this means Dennis will run wild on the I Dare You To selections. Otherwise, I try to keep it, close to the vest with higher education things. To close out the show, my I Dare You To selection is an I Dare You To read a book about baseball. I know I talk a little bit about this, and especially now that the baseball season kicked off just a matter of a couple weeks ago, and I'm going to my first game this week. There's a lot of books out there on baseball. But I'm going to put one out there if you haven't seen it. It's a nice picture book. It's not quite large enough to be a standard coffee table book, but close enough, called Lost Ballparks by Dennis Evanosky and Eric Koss. So Lost Ballparks, again, it's a book about lost ballparks, old-time baseball fields that existed at some point and now no longer do. For example, the stadium used in Milwaukee, where I'm from, for the original Milwaukee Brewers or Braves, again, going back deep into the early part of the 20th century, and how that ballpark looked and whatever became of it. Of course, it was replaced by County Stadium at some point where the Milwaukee Brewers played, and then replaced again in recent years by what was once known as Miller Park and now is American Family Insurance Park where the Milwaukee Brewers play. But it's very interesting, the stories of some of these baseball fields, where they were, how they grew, what they looked like compared to modern-day fields. So I'm going to throw that out there. It's an easy read because, again, it's mostly a picture book about lost ballparks. Even if you're not specifically a baseball fan, you'll probably enjoy the book just because if you're into architecture or design or learning about communities across the United States and the sport of baseball and where they played. Well, as I said, this might be a slightly shorter than normal episode, and it is. So we're going to let you go early today from class. But don't forget, there's always another episode. I want to thank our audience for tuning in. And if you have something to say or you have topics you want us to discuss, email us at wbcisfa@gmail.com. For this and all What's Brewing CSWA podcasts, find us on Google Podcasts, your Apple Podcasts app, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, and the TuneIn app on your Amazon Echo, and you can use Alexa. What's Brewing CSWA is a production of Studio 1051, a creative collaboration of me and Dana Yarbrough. This has been episode number 81, recorded the morning of Tuesday, April 13th, 2021. Have a great day, everybody, and have a great week.